America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. This is not the voice of your cultural crusader. I'm not trying to fool anybody. Michael Medved is out observing the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah, Jewish New Year. So in the big chair today, myself, one of his producers, Greg Tomlin, alongside Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College, and Washington Policy Center's Communications Marketing Director, friend of the show, dear friend of ours, David Bowes is in the house. We got the three amigos in the KTTH studio today. I'm thrilled to be on the air with you, David. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You know, it's been a very long time since I filled in on the Michael Medved show. I mean, I think it's been 4 years or so since I last appeared.
Yeah, and back in the day, I did a week or two with you on the air, but this is years ago, ancient history. And I had a blast with you, and I've been itching to do some radio with you ever since. And what a great opportunity today. Let's do this.
just don't cough in my face. That's all.
No,
I ask
exactly. For, yeah. Keep your distance. And we're going to try to keep it lighthearted today, but there are many serious subjects to talk about. We'll talk about a first world problem you had in the last 24 hours. And yes, it was a first world problem, but it's right at the top of first world problems.
It's a major first world problem.
Yes, we'll get to that. We're going to welcome Doug Belkin of the Wall Street Journal, who's going to talk about his dynamite piece, A Generation of American Men Give Up on College. Quote, I just feel lost. We're going to be talking to him at 12:30. We're going to welcome Michael Rubin at 1 o'clock, a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute on Afghanistan.
That's where lightheartedness really takes off. You know, that's where we're going to keep the show really light.
That was a great pivot I just made there. Yeah. You can school me in all my mistakes today, most assuredly. And we're going to kick it off with a really lighthearted topic, which is COVID-19. And I know we all have exhaustion from the pandemic, talking about it, living through it. It's been, you know, a nightmare in many ways, bringing so much hardship, adversity, difficulty. There have been some areas of beauty as well. And yes, I will say beauty because it can bring out the best in humanity and the worst. But I hate to say it, we are, you know, reaching record highs in COVID-19 cases, and deaths now are even going off the charts. And it's very disheartening because I've been saying for weeks now, Dave, that around, you know, May or June, I had sort of shifted my mindset, like, all right, like,
over.
I'm cleaning my hands of this. You know, I got the double shot and I'm ready to move on. And now I, along with millions of other people, are just feeling so much whiplash right now. And my default posture is not to necessarily go after, you know, government leaders, officials, politicians, and really get into the weeds of mandates. I find those discussions very interesting, very important, very pertinent. But at the same time, I've been trying to develop a posture of a sort of grace-filled humility in this time. I know that's not the most talk radio thing I could say on the air.
It's very Medved.
But it's Medved, the freaking virus that we're all fighting, okay? It's not each other. And I'm trying to focus my anger on the virus itself because it's a common enemy for all of us.
I think there's a little bit of both to that, though.
Of course.
Ideally, if we lived in the ideal world, we'd only be fighting the virus. But what people see are things like in Washington State when the governor makes rules that apply to, say, construction workers that are most likely to benefit him in public employee positions, then, you know, their jobs can keep going. But in the private sector, their jobs can't. Or the governor's, you know, keeping his emergency powers at full force. The legislature under the current leadership has apparently decided that they're not interested in they're not interested until they're out of legislative session and complaining about how they don't have their own legislative authority back to help guide the governor, which is their job at this point. And that's why, you know, you've got overly broad policies that impact people, but they have to, instead of being able to appeal to their elected representatives, they have to appeal all the way to the state. And then we have on the national level similar things where, you know, there is a large partisan divide in how people approach COVID, and some want to point fingers and say, you know, I mean, I remember when certain states didn't close down, it was, well, all these Republicans are going to die, good riddance to them.
Right.
That did not happen. But instead of saying, okay, well, maybe we should reflect and say, there's more than one way to approach this
right.
virus, and there are trade-offs, you know, there's more freedom and more risk and so forth, and that people make reasonable or can make reasonable decisions in either direction. Instead, we have, you know, the finger pointing and then we have the two extremes, one saying let them die, the other saying, you know, inject me with cow medicine, whatever the case is.
Yes.
You know.
And to quote the great Thomas Sowell, there are no solutions in life, especially in politics. There are only trade-offs. And I think when the pandemic first got going in 2020, I thought, what an opportunity for the laboratories of democracy to kind of figure it out state by state.
In Wuhan.
Sorry. But no, and like you said, we would see the results play out in real time. Instead, what you had, which is all too often the case now in this era that we live in, is everything just got hijacked by partisan politics and blaming one side or the other as if they're the epitome of evil and we're the epitome of goodness. And it was so frustrating to watch because it could have been at least fascinating to watch, okay, how's this strategy going to play out? And then let's compare it to that strategy and so on and so forth. But that just did not happen.
And I think you have media losing credibility. I mean, particularly CNN, if they had any to begin with. But, you know, here they are having the brother of Governor Cuomo interview him constantly during the election period of time. And he's the greatest governor that ever. He's a pillar of leadership.
He's the love gov. He's going to run for president.
Oh, my gosh. He's so awesome. You know, and you had conservatives saying, well, wait a second. He's putting infected patients back in old folks' homes where the number one most vulnerable people are.
Yeah.
And the rest of the media is kind of like, yawn, who cares? Now, all of a sudden, he gets a sexual harassment claim. It's like, oh, well, hashtag me too. We can cover sex. That's awesome. Mm. So they're back into, you know, the guy's out. So. And all of a sudden he's bad, but that's all post-election. No interest in what he was doing, you know, prior to that. So people see that kind of manipulation. And then I think you have a situation where, you know, one of the things that irritated me a great deal about certain public health officials was saying things like, you know, don't wear a mask, and then changing their mind right away. And then later saying, well, you know, I just wanted to make sure that people save the mask for the right people. Once you
right,
start lying,
right.
then you'll never be trusted on that score. You have to be open and
what
direct.
An important lesson, David, because I understand the virus is changing. There's variants. It's affecting people differently. And so a lot of this is data collecting and then recommending something and then going, wait, we got to put a pause on that because it's actually shifting more. But instead, I think what people have seen is a lot of experts try to do a little bit of social engineering and mind games with people.
Yeah.
Like you said, in the early on of the pandemic, it was, well, masks don't really work. Really? We just want to save them for a hospital. Just tell us that, okay? Be frank with us. Be upfront. Be candid. Tell it to us straight. The same rule applies for politicians and any kind of leader. If you just give it to me straight, I'm a big boy. Let me decide from there on. Let the American people decide. Give them some choice in the matter rather than I'm going to play games with them and try to manufacture the exact outcome I want. Then it's a disaster. And then you fuel this environment of distrust that is so deeply embedded in all of us in this day and age.
Yeah, and I know it's culturally popular to make fun of Trump supporters and stuff, but recall, you know, toward the end of the election when then President Trump was saying, hey, you know, I've got these vaccines coming. They're going to be awesome. Probably see them in November. And you know, generally it was kind of a scoffing, like, well, that's a crock. And I wondered, nobody was speaking up. And then like the 2 days after the election, there's these stories that are appearing everywhere about these vaccines that have gone through trials and all this. And mm-hmm. I thought, how is it possible? I mean, in every other case, there would have been leaks. There would have been verifications. There would have been, well, he is onto something there, that this is actually happening. That did not happen with him. And so is it any wonder there's a significant chunk of the American population that's less trusting now? So.
Greg Tomlin and our good friend Dave Bowes in on the Michael Medved show today as Michael observes Rosh Hashanah. We have so much more coming up on a busy day. If you want to get in on the action, it's 1-800-955-1776. Thanks for listening. We will be right back.
Sign up today for our free weekly newsletter at michaelmedved.com.
Associate producer Greg Tomlin on the Michael Medved Show, joined by my good friend Dave Bowes and Pride of Hillsdale College, Jeremy Steiner, helping steer this ship in the right direction. Today, we're just talking, Dave, during the break with the news on here in the studio. We got forest fires, a plague, a crisis in the Middle East, China concentration camp, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. I mean, look for the signs, I guess, but it seems to be an unrelenting time where it's just one thing after another. And part of me wants to go, well, that's the 24-hour news media, and they want to keep you tuned in constantly to one crisis after another. If it bleeds, it leads. But it's hard to ignore some of the stark realities out there right now.
Yeah, even the wafer-thin print papers now, you open them up and it's still the same depressing news. I mean, it's just depressing, And as you say, you know, this summer, I think a lot of us were thinking, oh, thank God, get this pandemic behind us and move on. And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, got a few variants that are causing some problems here. And then all of a sudden, it's mask back on, everybody. And so it feels like, you know, whatever starting you were going to get, it's like when you're a kid and you've got one of those jalopies and you're trying to start your car and you hear it crank over a couple of times to get your hopes up.
Yes.
You know, now we're at that point where we realize it was just there to get the hopes up.
Was it all a dream?
You're still going to have to call your parents. And they're going to have to pick you and your date up, you know, and drive you the rest of the way.
In recent weeks, more than 10 states have reached their highest hospital admissions for COVID-19 of the pandemic. The U.S. continues to average more than 160,000 new coronavirus cases a day. I have a lot of family in the medical field, and they're overwhelmed. I talked to my sister a few weeks ago, who said it was one of the hardest weeks she's ever had at her job. And you can't argue with people that are, you know, to borrow a phrase, their lived experience in this day and age. And like you said, the mask mandates. Speaking of which, there is some news today. The Seattle Seahawks, and is it Lumen Field? I thought it was Quest Field and then CenturyLink Field. And now
Lumen
Field. Yeah. Okay. I can't keep Lumen. Up.
Yeah.
I like the Fenways and Yankee Stadiums of this world that never change. But we have to change
well,
every
get a
couple
few
years.
Billion dollars, Greg. You can rename it whatever you want. You just call it
Tomlin Field.
Yeah.
But the Seattle Seahawks are going to require proof of COVID-19 vaccination. This announcement today, all guests age 12 and older will be required to provide proof of COVID-19 vaccination or a negative COVID-19 test result taken within 72 hours prior to kickoff to attend Seahawks games at Lumen Field. The Seahawks will begin enforcing the new policy starting with the team's home opener September 19th versus the Titans. In accordance with current Washington State King County mask mandates, fans and staff will also be required to wear masks at all times.
But are they going to be required to be quiet, too? You know, I mean, the fans are, the 12s are famed for being really loud. You know, that's one of the advantages that the Seahawks have.
Screaming.
Record-breaking screams
yes.
from the NFL crowd. And we know that one of the things you're advised not to do is scream or talk loudly because, you know, the more of your particles are going to go farther out there. And, you know, I've been to a few Seahawks games. I think it's fair to say that people do enjoy an adult beverage.
No.
At the,
no.
Yes. And, you know,
that's
talking,
breaking.
We're talking 7-Eleven size Slurpee beers.
That costs $23.99.
You know, and you take out your 401k to cash it out so that you can buy your beer there. And then they're screaming everywhere. And so, I mean, I saw that and I thought, okay, but if in this case with the variant, the vaccinated can spread it too, and you can also get sick if you're vaccinated, you might have less of a chance than unvaccinated of going to the hospital, but it's still out there. So, you know, I'm just wondering, are they going to go for the quiet time 12s or what?
And imagine all the bacteria on those masks after 3.5 hours of shouting into a mask with beer, hot dog breath, all kinds of nasty. That's where my mind goes when
well,
I hear
and
that.
Think about it. They've held them down, or they've been screaming. It's down below their nose half the time anyway.
And how will they enforce that with 70,000 people?
How do you do that? And after a few beers, is it really going to be fitting that well?
This may be an unpopular opinion.
This
I want to
be warmer though. It's usually pretty cold.
It will be, yeah, when it starts getting really cold out here. But this is an unpopular opinion. I want to get your take on it, Dave. But the first sort of 14 to 16 months, I had more patience for the idea of to a degree of lockdowns or let's try this out because we were still trying to understand the virus. I had many problems with it. But now that we have an abundance of choices set before each individual, I do not understand why we still try to do what seems to me like a bit of virtue signaling with mask wearing, or we're going to have a mandate for this because we're really just trying to protect people that don't want to get the shot in the first place. If you want to get the shot, data is showing even with Delta, at least at this juncture, you know, you could put a new study in front of me anytime and I could change my stance on this, but the vaccines prove that you will not get a severe case of COVID at this point, right?
You're less likely.
You're less likely. Yeah, right. I got to choose my words carefully here. But who are you really protecting, right? It's people that don't want your protection if you're going to say we're going to force masks on everybody and blah, blah, blah. But you can get a choice now to get this shot and feel more at ease about if you get COVID, what kind of outcome will come to pass.
I saw some folks on my Facebook feed saying things like, well, you know, I've got, you know, people who have medical conditions, they can't get the vaccination, so that's why there should
be this mandate. Don't go to a Seahawks game then.
Well, but you can also, you know, they're saying that you can transfer it if you get the vaccine anyway, so that argument does not apply. You know, here's the thing, there's as we were talking about partisan differences and how we look at this, there's also partisan differences in how they see the threat. You know, and we've seen that if people left of center tend to wildly exaggerate the threat of death from COVID-19, and I mean wildly exaggerate, whereas people on the right, where we get all the mockery and stuff in pop culture because, you know, they're not interested in the vaccine or they don't want masks or whatever, they're supposed to be unscientific and a joke. But nobody takes on the fact that the left is petrified because they think that, you know, you get COVID-19 and it's a 60% death sentence. And it's not even close to that, you know.
Right. I mean
we're talking about lightning strikes here.
Depending on your age. But let's go to a bit of audio here. This is clip 9. It's Dr. Jane Morgan, who's executive director of Piedmont Healthcare COVID Task Force in Georgia.
And so there's a lot of concern about ICU capacity, but there's also concern about our staff capacity, and not just in people being able to show up to work physically, that capacity mentally and emotionally, because this particular surge, this fourth surge, is the first surge that we have had that's entirely preventable.
This is an issue that doesn't get talked about a lot. And, you know, I would venture a guess that some conservatives would have a tendency to scoff at this. But she's exactly right in that healthcare staff are stretched way too thin right now. And there's also, believe it or not, a bit of PTSD for that first wave of COVID and then thinking we're out of it. And now they're doing it all over again. I mean, walk to these ICU units. And it's devastating stuff, and so much of it is preventable.
I'll buy the part where people who deal with the sick and the dying, especially when they're dying young, I mean, but I think, you know, at any age it's tough to deal with these things. And the lack of breathing, I mean, that freaks me out at any point. But I'm not buying that this is the wave that was entirely preventable.
I agree with you.
This wave's been going around the whole world.
Yes.
It's a nasty little bug.
Yes.
So, nice try.
Yes, and it's unpredictable. Right? And it's evaded much of the vaccines and these new variants, God help us. All right, Greg Tomlin and Dave Bowes in for the Michael Medved. It's the Michael Medved Show. Associate producer Greg Tomlin sitting in for the man who is observing Rosh Hashanah today. I'm joined by Dave Bowes, longtime friend of the show, friend of Jeremy and I's. It's been a fun first two segments, and now we are honored to welcome Doug Belkin to the program. He's the higher education reporter for the Wall Street Journal. His latest piece is titled, A Generation of American Men Give Up on College. And four paragraphs in, it reads, in the next few years, two women will earn a college degree for every man. Doug, thanks so much for joining the show. Please, you could join us.
I appreciate the invitation.
So what's happening here and why does it matter?
this is a big, long train. There's a lot to unpack, but the short of it is that this very long-running, in 1980, men and women were on par in terms of enrollment at 2 and 4 year colleges across the country. And women have been growing in a little bit more than men every year. almost every year since then, with a few exceptions. That accelerated during the pandemic pretty significantly, and we've hit this sort of new inflection point where now women are 60% of the college students in the country.
Yeah, you mentioned that during the pandemic, this has really accelerated. Do you think there's a reason for that, where women went, okay, now it's time to really, you know, get dedicated here and study up, and men kind of went, well, to hell with it, I'm going to relax and play video games or kind of wander for a bit? Or why did this jump so much during the pandemic?
I think there's a number of reasons. Part of the biggest driver is that, especially for working class guys, if their mom or dad got sick, couldn't work, got laid off, they stepped in to take some of the responsibility, some of the financial responsibility over. So a lot of guys dropped out of college just to go to work. And there's been a lot of work. You know, it's a tight labor market. If you want a job at Amazon, you can get one. You can make $20 an hour and maybe get a signing bonus along the way. So there's work if you want it for guys in particular. You know, women were impacted in different ways. A lot of women were staying home to take care of young children or older parents. So that curtailed their ability to work, but maybe they could still go on to school online and stay in a little that way and continue to move forward. So I think those are two of the reasons that happened. But it really, what's been happening lately has been happening for a while, and it just sort of exacerbated it.
Hi, Doug. David Bose here. You know, one of the things that you cite in the story is social science researchers that list some distractions and obstacles, including video games, pornography, increased fatherlessness, things that, and then the overprescription of drugs for being inattentive in class. And then shortly after that, you cite the case of a Daniel Bryles, an 18-year-old who he's a musician who goes through a list of, hey, if I'm going to be a doctor or lawyer, I need this formal education. But if I'm going to be anything else, there's classes online. I mean, I can learn this stuff on my own. Why spend, you know, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but why spend $150,000 trying to earn this stuff? You know, based on your research, how do you balance all these reasons out, you know, and how much responsibility for the lack of men in college would you give to each category?
It's a really complicated question. I think there's a really large structural shift happening right now with regard to the essential nature of the four-year degree, right? It's been preeminent since, I don't know, the 70s, right? We had this moment in time where the government said, hey, we're concerned that the Japanese are going to lap us. Let's stop putting our time and money into vocational schools and get everybody into college. We want a college for all attitude, and we want to get a lot of folks in college. That moved the needle significantly for who went to college, but it's sort of overswung because now we've got this huge student loan debt. Graduation rates suck, and that is it's made college a really risky concern for folks. Men are a little bit less likely to want to take on debt for education, and they have different options getting out of school. And what's happened recently, and I think this is a really important part of the story, is that there have emerged in sort of backlash to the college for all movement these shorter, faster, cheaper pathways into the labor market. You can graduate high school and get a credential in code, or work a crane, or work in an apprentice as an apprentice for a while. These are sort of coming back in vogue. There's more energy around them, and they tilt toward men. So I think that pathway is regaining footing. You know, America did not create a vocational training thing, an apprenticeship program like the Europeans did when we moved into this college for all. And I think we're rebuilding that right now. I think men are trying to take advantage of that a little bit more than women are.
Well, one of the things that I wondered about was that the colleges themselves that you describe in this piece, for the most part, when they're confronted with this material, they basically say, well, too bad for the men. And not all the mental health counselors. They seem interested in helping these young men, but the colleges themselves seem focused on, you know, like there's one that describes, you know, those who have historically been held the highest educational advantages, these white young men, even though, of course, the young men that we're talking about had no advantages whatsoever. You know, they were not a part of that history. These are individual kids that we're talking about, but they've kind of surrendered into this more of a woke worldview where they're lumping people, these young students, into racial categories of who, quote unquote, deserves assistance and who doesn't. And there's this resistance to helping them out. You know, might that explain, you know, a lot? Because if the attitude is hostile toward these young kids when they need help, you know, I mean, kids aren't stupid. They pick up on that, I think. And, you know, and if they're being blocked from the assistance that would otherwise be given to them, you know, the colleges are getting what they ask for. So, and, you know, the market's responding with these certificates and trades and such. How do you see it?
I think that's a huge issue. I think a lot of guys really feel put off by some of this stuff. You know, but it's not insignificant. American universities were built by rich white men for their sons, and other groups, Jews and women and blacks and everybody else, had to sort of build a bridge into these institutions and find their footing, and they have. By and large, these schools have diversified. But the energy that it took to do that, and to some extent they still have to do that, the pendulum is past the even point now. And especially these white guys, but it's boys in general, the politics don't work to reach out and spend resources on them when, again, they have this history. And so this, a lot of this is politics. A lot of this is doing what the universities feel they need to do to be on sort of the right side of history. In the meantime, you know, the numbers are just pretty ugly for boys. And so I think they need to address it, and maybe they will.
Yeah, you write, at the close of the 2020-2021 academic year, women made up 59.5% of college students, an all-time high, and men just 40.5%. U.S. colleges and universities had 1.5 million fewer students compared with 5 years ago, and men accounted for 71% of the decline. So, like you said, if many colleges, universities were started, you know, by men for their sons, are we just seeing a major pendulum swing here? And this is one of, you know, sort of the violent swings, and then eventually it's going to settle back in the middle? Are any colleges taking sort of an affirmative action stance to get more men into their institutions?
Yeah, so there's sort of two things happening at once. There's enrollment, in which the schools are indeed putting their thumb on the scale for men to get them enrolled, especially at private schools. So there are just more accomplished girls graduating high school. 70% or so of the valedictorians from high school today are girls, women. But schools want to maintain some gender balance, so the co-ed schools, obviously. And so to do that, it's become much more competitive for the girls to get in, so the boys just don't need to hit the same numbers, the same bar.
Doug Belkin of the Wall Street Journal, high education reporter, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for your piece, A Generation of American Men Give Up on College. You can read it at michaelmedved.com. The show rolls on. Associate producer Greg Tomlin and Dave Bowes in for Michael Medved today. We'll be right back shortly. Greg Tomlin and Dave Bowes in for the Michael Medved Show on this Tuesday after the long weekend. Thanks for Doug Belkin for joining us about his piece on American men giving up on college en masse. Really crazy, and there are definitely some long-term implications here to explore. Here's what it boils down for me, Dave. This is a bit of my editorializing. I was trying to just get information and Doug's perspective in that previous segment. But I'm going to take the 30,000-foot view here for a second and look at the forest instead of the trees. I have this idea that human beings are sort of pre-programmed to live with a sense of mission or vocation, and we derive like our meaning and purpose in that mission. And for millions of young men, for decades and decades, college seemed to be a bit of a springboard into those respective missions. And now with millions of young men opting away from matriculation, I worry that the traditional means of vocation formation, yes, I've written some of this down, will not be replaced by like a generation of entrepreneurs and journeymen and startups, but rather a kind of restless spirit that permeates this generation of young men that we've seen historically can manifest itself in terrible self-destructive ways. Video game addiction, alcoholism, drugs, partying, just doing stupid stuff. And I'm not saying by any means that college is the only answer, but it's just sort of a sign of the times for me. Is that too much of a stretch, or do you agree with any of that?
Well, I certainly agree with the idea that people are made to have purpose. You know, men and women, they need a purpose, and men without jobs, without professions, have trouble. In fact, you remember our old friend Rabbi Lappin used to talk about not retiring, because when people retire, you know, and just decide to do nothing, they lose their sense of purpose. Now, you can retire in a way from your job as long as you have another job. And maybe that's taking care of your grandchildren. Maybe that's, you know, starting some kind of small business that you wanted to. But just giving up on purpose is a bad thing. One of the interesting things I thought about this piece was he's really recognizing a trend that's been going on for a long time. It's just been spiked in it. It's like, the Titanic was sinking for a while slowly, and then suddenly it was sinking rapidly. Right. And that's generally what he's recognizing here is men were sinking for a long time, and now they're sinking rapidly. And the response of the top schools in the nation seems to be, yeah, but those are white guys, you know.
Right.
And even though he points out it's actually all young men, but white guys most prominently, young white males.
Well, yeah, part of Doug's story says the college gender gap cuts across race, geography, and economic background.
Right, and he points out that young white males from lower socioeconomic backgrounds might even be less likely to go to college than other minority groups. So, you know, but there's a wokeness of, you know, like I say, they're quoting things like, well, you know, that is a demographic that's historically been overrepresented, as though the individuals don't matter. It's just they're
only the
group category matters,
exactly.
Right? Which is really a Marxist worldview nonsense. So, you know, I look at this and I think, you know, the kids that we're going through and saying, hey, look, you can earn a degree, or you can earn a certificate, you can get that knowledge in a different way. That's smart stuff. You know, there's a lot of people really struggling with college debt. We've got, you know, I forget how many trillion we're up to with college debt these days, but it's significant. It's a problem. Young people are burdened by that debt in order to, in some cases, to track down a $35,000 a year job. They've amassed $150,000 of debt plus interest, which is just absurd. So some of it is smart in terms of not going through that and looking for this. But
it must be replaced by something substantive, meaningful, a kind of vocation, or even, dare I say, calling in your life. And college used to be a means by, like, hey, this will be your springboard into a career. You might meet your wife there, your spouse or whatever. And let's not mince words. You were kind of hinting at it there. Colleges, universities, for decades now, have been a bastion of this woke ideology. I mean, they really kind of promoted it to the core. And what is the main target of woke ideology? It's
males,
particularly white males.
White males.
And then you're going, no, come to our university and we'll tar and feather you for 4 years about how evil you are. So it's not surprising that a lot of males who are told that you're the ones who run the patriarchy and we need to dethrone you rulers over us. Like, yeah, I want to hear that for 4 years and spend $120,000 to listen to that.
And there's also, you know, there's also a problem with young men not having jobs earlier in life. You know, when I was a kid, I remember my first job. I was 9 years old and I was helping clear out a field, you know, and the boss at the time took me under a wing and she said, now look, I'm paying you the same as anybody else here. I expect the same result, you know. So as a little kid, you know, I was running around picking up rocks and stuff. And then I ended up working, you know, out in the fields many, many times. Now I know, obviously, you know, nine's really young. She was doing me a favor. But now, the average teenagers are not getting jobs like they used to. I mean, it's just not that common, and it's much more common for people to get their first job closer to 20 or 21 than it is earlier. I don't think that's healthy because it doesn't give them that sense of work ethic. It doesn't give them a sense of, you know, of drive. And it allows kind of the video game culture of, hey, you know what, if I've got free time, I know what to do with it. I'm going to play a game online. I'm going to goof off. I want, you know, young kids to be able to goof off and have a good time. But, you know, like when I was a kid, you would go and buck hay during the summer and you got to goof off after you were done or in the middle of the day when it was too hot. And then you'd come back in the evening and finish the job. But, you know, now it's just kind of on standby.
There's a sort of romantic view of this notion of finding yourself, or like a spiritual wanderer, or, you know, I'm going to try a lot of things and I'm not sure really what I'm going to settle on. And again, that's been glorified in so many offerings and entertainment and whatnot, because the goal is kind of just to distract and make people captive to all of these distractions, whether it's the glowing rectangle in your pocket, the television set, you know, the Cineplex or whatever. And it's less about, you know, set out on a course in life, feel like you're on a mission, a mission from God, and go after it. You know what I mean? It's more like, no, just take your time. You don't need to grow up so fast. Hang out. Enjoy beers with your buddies.
Culturally, we put this kind of this rite, kind of a rite of passage to, like, the prom. It's this huge deal in the movies, mm-hmm. and everyone looks to it, and it's really a major letdown in real life, and you should never spend money on the prom. You should just buy whatever it is at used clothes and go to McDonald's or whatever. It's a total ripoff, kids. Don't do it. And parents should be instructing their kids, look, you know what? I also went to the prom. I know it's supposed to be a big deal. You can get the nice dress and all that, but let's face it. You know, there used to be things like formals, and it's reached the pinnacle of our society. I went to a presidential inauguration. It was supposed to be the formal.
Sure.
And when I walked in, they're still playing Michael Jackson's Billie Jean, you know. It's like, you might like Michael Jackson's
Dave,
Billie Jean, you know,
but it
has nothing to whatsoever. There's no formality whatsoever, but we put this premium on acting like a child forever. And then, you know, while other places, like we talked about, I think Norway or Sweden during the break, where they're choosing a career path to march toward purpose, toward college, whereas in the U.S., you know, we're kind of like, oh, no, you got to find yourself in your 20s. It's like, here, find a job and find yourself while you're on vacation. How about that?
What a great point. And I know this is a slight tangent from this story about men going to college less and less. But we're talking about, you know, traditions going by the wayside and formalities and just, oh, be a kid forever. And just, I was at this golf tournament a few months ago. I know, golf tournament. They're traditionally a bit stuffy, right?
Yeah.
You're going around the golf carts and, yeah, you might have a few beers and whatnot. But golf is generally a bit of a quiet sport, right? Shh, you have the people at the tournaments holding up their hands when someone's about to swing the club.
Like a Seahawk game now. Got to be careful.
The golf tournament I was at, Dave.
Yeah.
I'd never seen anything like it in my life. I've golfed my whole life. We had three golf carts, like five guys blasting gangster rap. And just everybody brought their own supply of alcohol. It was the loudest experience of my life. By the seventh hole, people were hungover. And I was just thinking, what planet is this? I've never known golf to be a sport where we're all just like partying and acting a fool and just being completely stupid and telling the dumbest stories. And I know it's golf. It's a bit of a stuffy thing, but it goes to your point where I was like, what is this like permanent adolescence? There's a bunch of 40-year-olds. What is this?
It fits in with the end of the world. You know, I mean, if you really think it's the end of the world, you might as well party like
there we go. We went there.
I can solve, by the way, this problem for a lot of young men. You know, if the first institution that gives up on their woke verbiage and instead just says, hey, look, young men, we're 70% women on campus, just so you know. I mean, as a young teenager, you're like, okay, I know where I'm going to college, you know.
It's Greg Tomlin and Dave Bowes in for the Michael Medved Show. That is our number one, if I'm looking at the clock correctly here. We're going to be joined by Michael Rubin, a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, coming up about the latest in Afghanistan. Hostage crisis or not, what is going on? What's the latest? We'll talk to Michael Rubin about that. Thank you so much for joining us. Lots more to get to on a very busy Michael Medved Show in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Sign up today for our free weekly newsletter at michaelmedved.com.